Good evening, this is Barbara Glickstein, and you're tuned into Health Styles, brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College. Health Styles is co-produced by the Center and is here every Thursday evening at 11 p.m. This evening, we will be continuing our series on health, general health, and health issues facing our veterans and those in the military. And this evening, we'll be talking about the culture of really tolerance for sexual assault and rape, which has been pervasive in the military and has been for many, many years. Despite Pentagon studies and task force recommendations and congressional hearings and legislative bills that have been not passed, rape and sexual assault and sexual harassment continue to occur at alarming rates year after year. A quote by Nancy J. Parrish, who's the president of Protect Our Defenders, a Washington-based advocacy group for sexual assault victims of both genders, and I quote, "Male victims face more obstacles, more prejudice against them, more disbelief, more efforts to silence and humiliate them," end quote. My guests this evening are Michael Matthews, a United States Air Force retired disabled veteran who served 20 years in our military. He also served 12 years of both active duty and 8 years in the reserves. He's also a former government employee and a military sexual trauma survivor, and has been an advocate now for this community and for all communities of sexual violence for over the past 13 years. Joining Michael Matthews is Jerry Lynn Matthews, who is his spouse for the past 28 years, and she's a licensed social worker, clinical and medical social worker for 20 years. Her area of expertise is as a trauma expert. I want to thank you both. I know that you are both New Yorkers who currently reside in New Mexico and spent time here in New York post 9/11, where Jerry Lynn Matthews was actively involved in as a trauma specialist with the New York City Fire Department. Jerry Lee Matthews is also doing work in military sexual trauma advocacy, and we'll hear a little bit more about a film, Justice Denied, that both Matthew and Jerry have conceived and produced. But first, let me welcome you both to Health Styles.
Good morning, Barbara.
Yes, thank you for having us, Barbara. Good morning.
Good morning. The issue of sexual assault and rape is pervasive, as I mentioned earlier. Matthew, we had a moment talking prior to going on the air about the issue of rape, and you had a strong statement that I'd like you to repeat for our listeners.
Well, you know, the job of what we're doing is trying to, you know, with the military, change the culture. But we need to change the culture in our society also. We need, because the same problems prevail everywhere, that, you know, rape happens to everybody. It happens to men, women, children. Doesn't matter if you're straight or gay. It happens across the board. And it has nothing to do with sexual preference or gender. It has to do with power and control and domination. And like in the military, 98% of all rapists are heterosexual males. And 53% last year, rapes happened to the victims were males. So to wrap your mind around it, this is something that we need to relook in our society and everywhere, basically, what rape is. You know, we're trying to educate the public. That's why we made our movie, Justice Denied.
Yes, and you're so right to be addressing this in this broader context, because the military represents societal and culture society, and then, of course, has its added, whether we want to refer to it in terms of militaristic or machismo, attitudes towards violence in general. And we know that, fortunately, and because of people like you and Jerry Lynn, coming forward and discussing this more openly, we're seeing little movement on college campuses now in terms of addressing rape culture. So today we're talking specifically about military sexual violence, but in fact, you're right. This is culturally something that must be addressed on all levels of society. So thank you for framing it so broadly, because unless we change the culture across the board in one place, it won't change. And you...
Yes, absolutely. And you know, when you think about the fact that, well, like in the military, it's only 0.3% of the military actually are committing these rapes. People say, well, that's such a small number. Yeah, it's a small number, but the fact of the matter is, an average 90% of all rapists are serial rapists, according to the APA, and an average rapist performs 300 to 600 rapes in their lifetime. So if you don't prosecute these people, they're just going to keep doing it over and over and over again.
So, Michael, you've been very brave and have been telling your story both in your film. First, you and Jerry were featured in the Academy Award-nominated film Invisible War, and then, as you mentioned, the film that you and Jerry Lynn produced called Justice Denied. And your story is not, sadly, an uncommon story in terms of years of living with what was a secret for you that you were unable to share until a level of trauma resulted in your facing your own truth about this. Would you share that?
Yeah, I thought I was the only one, and I kept it quiet for 30 years. I wanted to have a career in the military. This happened when I was 19, back in 1974. And I never told anybody, and I thought I was dealing with it, but I wasn't. And 7 suicide attempts later, I finally came forward in a counseling session. You know, I broke down and told the truth. And, you know, we decided to make this movie with my wife, being the catalyst behind the men's movement, you know, got us into a lot of different things. And she found out they were making a movie, The Invisible War, and there was no men in it. And she called them, and they had no idea of the numbers. So then they interviewed a bunch of us, and I was in the movie along with my wife. And after that, we decided to make a movie about the men. And one thing that was amazing, that every man was just... We put them in front of the camera. We didn't ask any questions. We told them to tell your story. And they told their stories. And every story was almost identically the same. I mean, you know, different places and different things. But everything had the same core. It was actually scary.
Jerry, you are a social worker in your area of expertise, working in... both as a licensed clinical and medical social worker, has focused on trauma. And now your work around military sexual trauma has taken such a lead nationally. Will you speak to what you've learned over the years and how this film, as well as being a public spokesperson along with Matthew on this issue, what you've seen happen? What kinds of things are you witnessing now?
Well, it's been a learning process for both Michael and myself. When Michael first came forward and shared this information with me, I was working with the FDNY, and it was a time when I was surrounded in my place of employment around a lot of post-trauma. And I think the ripple effect of 9/11 had a great deal to do with him coming forward and sharing that with me. And at first, I was kind of relieved to know that something was wrong, because I had suspected for years that there was something he wasn't telling me. He had an underlying depression and anger and physical symptoms. But, you know, you can go to counseling and, you know, you may not be able to tell the truth to yourself at that point. So, I was relieved on the one hand and stunned on the other. It was kind of a double-edged sword. So at that point, there really wasn't anywhere for me to go. Facebook really wasn't around at that point. And so looking to social media or looking to find a support group around MST was initially quite difficult. But eventually, I was able to find some veterans groups online, and I reached out, and the female survivors took me under their wing because I didn't really have anyone else to talk to about this other than to go to therapy once a week. Excuse me.
Jerry Lynn is having a coughing seizure.
It's okay. Have a sip of water.
Oh, sorry about that. Allergy season is here.
Oh, boy.
In the Southwest.
Understand.
The other thing that I've learned is there are so many physiological symptoms to trauma and emotional symptoms, and every traumatic event has specific nuances. You know, the Twin Tower situation and crisis may have certain nuances that rape survivors have that are not exactly the same. So although there are a lot of similarities to traumatic events, there are also differences. Mm-hmm. And working out in the community with my husband has afforded us both an opportunity to continue to learn more about the needs of survivors, what it's like to navigate the legislative system and how challenging that can be, and also to continue to allow the public to hear more about what we need with respect to support so that we can make policy change.
Mm-hmm. And Jerry, I know you're speaking both as a spouse first and of course as a clinician. And I'm wondering how it's been a support for other spouses of men who have come forward and have shared their story, both in your film, Justice Denied, as well as in the support work that you're doing and the advocacy work that you're both doing nationally. What is there now more of a support for the spouses? Let's talk about the spouses for a moment.
Okay.
Who perhaps like you have lived not knowing together with your spouse for a number of years, and mm-hmm. how has that evolved, or is that evolved yet to a point where you think it could be, and is the military helped at all?
Well, I think that's an area that needs a lot of work still. With respect to significant others and spouse, I know there's a large divorce rate in the military anyway, and that may be due to these underlying issues that are just, you know, coming to the surface now. There are, you know, there's multiple marriages. There are issues with PTSD that become secondary PTSD with family and children. I don't think there's enough right now for significant others, husbands, wives, spouse, children. There's nowhere near enough right now with respect to support. I know I can go to the VA with my husband for couples counseling, but they don't afford individual counseling to the significant other or spouse of the MST survivor, at least not yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe down the road that's something that will be available. As far as other individuals, you know, I talk occasionally to some other significant others, but not so much with the males. A lot of the males are divorced. We've had several, I could say, divorce casualties mm-hmm. that we know of since we've been in this movement.
Men coming forward, yes. A lot of the men, when they come forward, because of not of the of giving counseling to the spouses, there is even the women, you know, military survivors of MST, the females. Their spouses don't get the proper counseling that they need mm-hmm. to even to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it creates a lot of friction and a lot of divorces.
Well, what I found helpful, at least in my city, I mean, I've gone to a lot of different therapists to talk about MST, and a lot of people are not specialists in trauma, regardless. So I would suggest that people look for a trauma specialist.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're shopping around for a therapist, ask them, what is your experience in working with trauma survivors? Mm-hmm. What is your experience working with sexual assault, rape, those kinds of things? I wound up recently at our Rape Crisis Center here, which basically focuses on women. So it's really not available much to the men. Mm-hmm. That's the problem.
Nice.
But for me, it's been a very good resource. For the men, like I said, the resources are few and far between.
And to reiterate that, the VA itself, and I talk about many VAs, I know there may be some out there because not all VAs operate the same. The one here in Albuquerque, I know from all the other men I deal with, they don't have groups for men. They don't have counseling specifically for men dealing with this, and men have different issues.
What RBA here does do is they have a an educational group that basically educates people about what the trauma is, but they do not have a process group. And what a lot of men are asking for is the opportunity to sit in a group with other men and share their experiences and get support from each other, and that's not available yet.
I understand that in terms of the Department of Veterans Affairs, there is a very high evidentiary burden placed on survivors of military sexual assault, and that that's one of the battles that advocacy groups and people like you are also confronting, how someone can actually file that kind of claim. Do either one of you have a comment about that?
Yeah, they're coming out with some new guidelines, too, and we've been working with the Washington VA. Trying to establish a better, they're trying to do a video, actually, because, you know, it's all evidentiary, and a lot of people don't come forward, and there's different ways of you can file by showing, you know, different pattern behavior changes or having someone you told at the time. You know, there's other ways of doing it. People don't understand how to navigate the system, and we're trying to educate that.
Yeah.
But as far as you know, the VA itself, you got to remember there's two VAs. There's the administrational part of the VA where you go for your disability, and then there's the hospital. All right, they're not the same.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to the hospital now, they will see people, veterans who say they were raped, regardless if they have disability or not. We've changed that as much. Not us per se, but the whole movement is finally, you know, we've forced that change. At least they'll see people for counseling now, even if they don't have a disability rating.
Okay. And I want to acknowledge, Michael, the wonderful editorial that you had published in the New York Times, The Untold Story of Military Sexual Assault, back in November of 2013. And I know that since November, there have been a number of bills that have been rejected. I know that in your editorial, you support Representative Spires' legislation, and we know that things have not moved in the direction that we had hoped. Can you address where things are at the moment, or what do you think will be happening next in terms of addressing how criminal cases are handled in our military currently under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and what people are hoping to change as a result of what's been an ineffective bias system?
Well, we have sat down and worked with Senator Gildebrand, who has a really good bill for the Senate. Senator McCaskill lambasted her. She wanted this watered-down bill that they passed through the Senate but couldn't pass through the House. You know, it's a political issue, just like everything else, and it's a shame because it shouldn't be a political issue.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a nonpartisan, but that's not what it is. It keeps happening in our government. Our government's broken.
It sure is.
I mean, and, you know, that has, you know, it bleeds into every sector. And until our elected officials grow up, I say that, and truthfully, that's my feeling. They act like little children. And if they could grow up and act like the adults that we elected to office and resolve their differences, we're never going to get anywhere.
Right. We are in a lockdown, aren't we, in a very sad way. I agree with you on that, Michael. I know that policy change is one of the actions, certainly, that we need. As you mentioned, certainly a cultural change. And Jerry recently shared with me that you both have been invited to the Pentagon, and I'm wondering if you want to share that story.
Well, that story seemed to work out not as we planned. We went there, and it seems like they wanted to do a little window dressing to show that they were trying to do something. Mm-hmm. They paid for us to come out there and wanted our advice. And when we gave our advice, they seemed to just basically argue with us about what we wanted, what we thought should be done. And, you know, it just didn't make any sense to us. They think they can train rapists not to commit rape. I mean, that's ludicrous. You know, we told them it's better off spending their time educating people to avoid getting raped, and you know, they think, well, we need to train these young men not to rape. It's like, yeah, you're making it sound like they didn't know they were raping somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not That's not the situation. You know, they'll keep rolling around with date rape. You know, like I said, rapists are predators. They're psychologically imbalanced, and these people are going to do this regardless of what you do.
Yes. And so the inability to get your message through hasn't seemed to stop either one of you. And
no, we're tenacious, Barbara. we really are. And one of the things I'd like to share is that Human Rights Watch representatives came out from New York to New Mexico to spend a few days with us. And that was very helpful. They're really starting to look at it as a human rights issue. So, I would just like to say that that's been a positive event that's taken place. But, you know, we are tenacious. And, you know, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Yes.
And we know that. And the biggest thing I think that will be helpful is to educate the public. And, you know, the more the public is aware, the more I think there might be hope for legislative change. And that's where we're stuck right now. Mm-hmm. It seems like every other day the legislator du jour has come up with a bill. You know, if there isn't one congressperson, then it's a senator. I mean, you can go daily and see something new. Congresswoman Speier actually had a very amazingly all-inclusive bill that she was in the forefront in coming forward on the at the Rayburn Building to share about, you know, what she thinks would be solution-focused and what would work. And, you know, I have yet to see anything, you know, quite as good as Congresswoman Jackie Speier's bill.
Mm-hmm. And when you say that there are people every day coming forward with another suggestion, is that spreading it too thin, if you will, for lack of a better way of describing this? And what would a united front do? I mean, I know, of course, Michael, as you just said, I'm in total agreement. Everything's become very partisan as opposed to them looking at the issues and moving forward through the sludge. But at the same time, is it helpful that we're seeing more and more of our elected officials coming forward with their own idea?
Well, you know, it's kind of like this. It's kind of like they all have big egos, okay? You know, not all of them, of course. But, you know, when they come running forward with bills, it's just like Senator McCaskill. She entered the race late,
yeah.
All right? She tried to upstage Senator Jill DeBrand. Your bill's no good, this and that. And you know what? They use their clout to fight each other, and they shouldn't be fighting each other. I mean, like Senator Gillibrand, to her credit, she supported McCaskill's bill, and she was hoping the same respect from Senator McCaskill. Mm-hmm. But no, she actually lobbied against Senator Gillibrand's bill, and there was nothing derogatory to the military. See, they think taking violent crimes out of the chain of command is going to diminish the commander's role to govern the military, and that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's actually just the other way around. By leaving it with them, they don't make the right decisions and don't prosecute these criminals for one reason or another, then this becomes a fabric of tearing down the military.
Yes.
Well, in some cases, Barbara, with respect to the chain of command, the Pentagon is always going to be there, so that is the chain of command. But when you're talking about an individual commander, at times, the individual commander could be the perpetrator, and that's where there's a problem. That's where we need civilian oversight. We realize that, you know, the UCMJ is not going to disappear, okay? We're not suggesting that. But what McCaskill suggested was having attorneys provided for all victims. And I thought, well, gee, that sounds really good when you first hear that. But then again, you look and it's like, well, okay, these attorneys are all military attorneys.
Right.
So it becomes a very incestuous system.
Yes, I have.
And so we need civilian oversight is what we need. We need more professionals from the civilian sector, be it forensic specialists and so on.
We have just a moment left, and your message is quite clear, and I know that our listeners are hearing you very clearly about what has been a consistent request that we will support with you and continue to fight for. Tell me, is Justice Denied available, and how can people find out more about the film, and is there one other action or something that you'd like our listeners to do and to support this work?
Well, we're having a lot of problems getting into distribution because of the subject matter. People don't want to hear, these distribution companies don't think people want to hear about men getting raped. I believe differently. I believe that the public has been very positive in venues we could get it in.
Mm-hmm.
We are a grassroots effort, and we run out of money, and we're looking for donations.
Mm-hmm.
And they can go to our site, justicedeniedmovie.com.
Alrighty.
And they can see the trailer, and they can make a donation that would help us get it across the country. We're trying to take it out on the road ourselves right now. We're getting turned down by film festivals. I mean, we won an accolade award. We were in the Berlin Film Festival for a Peace Award. You know, we've made a lot of things like that, but they won't let us out there.
We're also up for a SAMHSA Award right now, which is really, really
great. Great.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is we're not getting the coverage to people to see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're going to start sales in July, actually.
All right, perfect. So for our listeners, you can go to the site justicedeniedmovie.com. You can watch the trailer, a very powerful, very moving trailer. You can support the work to get that information of the film out. Perhaps you have a conference coming up, you're involved in healthcare issues, and as my guest this evening, Michael Matthews and Jerry Lynn Matthews. Michael Matthews is a United States Air Force retired disabled veteran. He is a military sexual trauma survivor and has been an advocate in the MST movement for over 13 years, along with Jerry Lynn Matthews, who is a licensed clinical and medical social worker for over 20 years. I want to thank you both for joining me on Health Styles today and to encourage you to keep me updated on this important advocacy work that you're doing on behalf of all of us. Thank you so much for joining me this evening on Health Styles.
Barbara, can I put one
yes,
last thing
Yes, of course.
In? My phone number is 505-270-2496.
It's 505-270-2496. 2496. And who would you like to hear from?
Anybody who wants to talk about it, anybody who wants to come forward if they never did, anybody who wants to help support this, the movement.
Also, they can reach me on Facebook. I'm under Jerry Lynn, GERILYNN, Weinstein Matthews.
Alrighty.
If anyone wants to write privately, you know, a survivor might want to come forward or might need support, it's Jerry, GERI, Lynn, LYNN, Weinstein, WEINSTEIN, Matthews with two T's.
Alrighty.
M-A-T-T-H-E-W-S.
I will post this information on our blog also so people have access to it with your permission.
Thank you so much,
Barbara. All right,
thank you. We appreciate you giving us the time.
And thank you for your work. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.